So I think I'll start with the announcements so that if none of these announcements are applicable for you, you can just ride on through without any interruption. And beginning with, I'm assuming that we kind of all know that the sign says that we all tested negative for COVID. So since I don't see any mask and I don't have that thought that says, oh, I forgot my mask. But we want to suggest that if you feel any kind of symptoms, you know, it could be anything from a headache to something, and you can wear a mask. And we should all keep in mind that masks are really optional. It's not, you don't have to wear a mask. So there may be many people who are choosing the option to wear a mask, and it doesn't mean that they're sick. They just are wearing the mask. And so whether someone wears a mask or not shouldn't become some kind of a thing. It's really just our own choice. But if you have any symptoms, then that's the only time we really are asking you to wear a mask. Kodo is going to offer some signups today, and he will be sitting in with Guy if that's something you would like to offer him. There is a change in Dawn's schedule. For those of you that are expecting to see Dawn today, or make sure, because I think this is the first time we've done this round, so you may have to check and see if you're where you're at today. Those practice meetings will be in the afternoon. She has something she has to do this morning, and so Dawn's meetings will not be this morning. They will be in the afternoon. And Sally's has a few tweaks on her schedule also. They will be this morning, but there's a few tweaks. So check us the board for Sally as well. And at least this day and tomorrow, it is unique in that we're seeing for the first time different teachers. And so making sure that you know which teacher you're going to be seeing with. Let me make sure. I think that's it. From it. Oh, that's right. Good. That's right. This afternoon, we're going to offer another Brahma Vihara, and it is forgiveness. And so really think inside. I mean, we all basically need forgiveness, but sometimes forgiveness is harder for some than others. So choose appropriately. Yeah, that's it. Okay, good. So let's sit in here. I'll give a little bit of, show you where I want to point. I just want to start some basic instructions on the feeling tones, and we might do it a little bit. I'll just do a little today, and then we might do it for a couple of days. We have plenty of time. And so just to begin to enter into this relationship with Vedana, which is such an important part of practice. It's the line between our body and our thinking mind, and it's the part of us that actually allows for awakening to happen. And the more we're able to sense into the body's felt sense of pleasant, unpleasant, and neither, and watch how the mind begins to react to that and push us, we can gently see this whole of the Dhamma, the whole of dependent origination, the whole of everything that's happening with us. We can begin to see it. And oftentimes, much of our hindrances, we can begin to see their presence when we can sense into the felt sense of that Vedana. And so we'll talk a little bit about the Vedana. And then maybe just the basic scripts for how to work with the hindrances themselves. how to both be with it, relax into it, and allow it to be the way it is. You don't have to fix anything. If there's nothing else in these early days with concentration, it's beginning to really know that you don't have to fix anything. You don't have to make something go away. You don't have to change something, make it right. That the natural capacity of mind in all conditioned moments in time, all conditioned experiences, which everything is, it is subject to change. It will change. And in the keeping your hands out of it, keeping your energy out of it, and keeping your focus on your anchor will help the natural system settle down sooner. So we'll see if we can practice a little bit with just steadying ourselves with the anchor and using the rain metaphor as a way to help us see what's happening and not get too involved with it. So that's a lot, but hopefully we can do it in a smooth, steady way. And if it's jarring, then that's just jarring sound. Really okay. All right, so just take a moment and notice where we are. Not like we weren't here before, but when you're starting to meditate, you can let your outer experience be a reference to bringing you into presence. Noticing sound as a start. It might seem like there's no sound. This is a thinking mind. Oh, there's no sounds here. But if you let your ears tell you if there's sound, there's all kinds of sound. So we have this posture that's upright and attuned to this present moment. You have a sense of the room that you're in here. Just have a sense of these outer conditions. This is where we are. Sense of the body sitting. Can't necessarily feel the whole body, but you have a sense of the body's posture. You can feel it. Certain pressure points. Certain contact. You just feel into that. Maybe you can feel the weight of the body here. I like Philip's use of the phrasing, the underside, the back of the arms, just letting the back of the arms relax. No need to hold the arms up. Letting the weight of your legs from the underside just relax. Feeling the pelvis and let it just sink into the cushion or the chair. And just let the whole body, it's sort of this recognition that you are sitting here, held by the ground, by the chair. Let the back body relax into the mat. We're just here, this moment. We know where we are. We're interested with this intention to practice. Yeah, so there's just a sense of being present. You can maybe feel how your mindfulness is alert. You can feel the relaxation of stillness, and you can feel the alertness, this ardency that comes with mindfulness. And take a moment to feel that, the immediacy of it, the directness of it. Maybe appreciate this wakefulness and steadiness. And if you haven't turned towards the breath, you can just feel into the breath here. Take a couple or two or three intentional breaths to bring your attention fully to the anchor. And gradually let your breath, you know, find its natural rhythm. It'll get shallower, softer, maybe even quicker. You follow it. You just allow it to be however it wants to be. We're just feeling into this sensation of the breath. You can use the inner and outer, the external. Let me get my thoughts here. You can use the exhale just noticing the exhale of the breath itself. One breath, one exhale. You may notice that the exhale is not as, the rhythm of it is not necessarily as steady. You're just attending to and feeling into the exhale, one exhale at a time. The mind wanders, bring it back to this exhale. You know, there can be this, oh, you've seen, felt one exhale, it's all the same, but is it? You can also shift to the inhale and begin to notice the inhale. If I find myself getting bored with noticing the exhale, I can shift to the inhale Notice what happens to the body when the inhale happens. In the beginning here, there's this interest in the breath is easier to find. It's easier to connect with. But as the time moves into this meditation, into this sit, that interest can begin to wane. And this is where we're practicing to develop the mind. At some point you might notice the mind has wandered. Into something else. You just wake up and notice that it wandered, that you're not noticing the inhale or the exhale of the breath. That some narrative, some story, the mind is thinking. And I'll give you how it is that I use this this little metaphor, rain, that Michelle McDonald came up with. It's just having a sense of recognizing what is this thinking? That you're thinking or that I'm thinking. It's not rushing through it. It's recognized this is thinking. And really see if you can get a sense this is thinking. Sometimes just recognizing the thinking is enough and you can turn right back to this. It's like enough to wake you up and so you can turn right back to your breath and the inhale and the exhale. Just aiming your attention and steadying it there. Sometimes it's not enough to just recognize thinking and go back. Sometimes we actually wake up inside the thinking and we're into it. And so there's a kind of in the story itself. We just are knowing that we're in this story. We're knowing that we're thinking about something. And if you're not able to pull away, you can just allow, kind of acknowledge that thinking to be there. But you actually want to get interested in it. And for me, that interest means I want to know how is the body responding to this thinking. What's the feeling tone of this thinking? Is it pleasant? Is it unpleasant? Is it neither? Sometimes thoughts can just be random thoughts and there's no feeling tone at all. But sometimes the thinking can get very connected to the body and there's a lot of feeling tone. And I shift my attention to the feeling tone itself. And so with this shift to the feeling tones, it may be that the recognizing it, kind of acknowledging or allowing it to be there and bringing your interest into that thinking is enough for you to disengage with it and go back to your object. The breath, exhale, inhale. So these first three steps, this recognizing, this allowing or acknowledging, and this interest, having an interest in, can bring us out of that habit thinking, and we can return, aim our attention back to the anchor. Sometimes it just isn't like that. And sometimes we really need to pay attention to what's happening with this thinking mind. It's taking our energy. The hindrances have caught a hold of us. And there's almost no space and so here it's acknowledging the hindrance as a hindrance. So if you're feeling this sloth and torpor, acknowledging, sort of recognizing, labeling this as a hindrance, as sloth and torpor. If you're noticing the mind is particularly aggressive in its thoughts, it is labeling this aversion, a hindrance. It's taking away my energy, hijacking it. And with aversive thoughts, you can use metta. You can do something to soften and find access to this heart quality of kindness. You're trying to non-identify with the aversion itself and instead identify with this sense of heart quality of kindness. And so sometimes shifting your anchor from the breath to the metaphrases and staying with those metaphrases over and over and over can help settle down your energy. You're shifting your energy from the thinking, aversive thinking, to the metaphrases. Doesn't matter how meta you feel, it really just matters that you're saying the phrases over and over and over. the sloth and torpor. You're recognizing thinking is taking away your energy. You open your eyes, bring some the light, the energy from the light. Open your eyes. Notice seeing. Shape, color, getting interested in seeing. When you're ready, you feel like you've found your ardency, your steadiness again, you can close your eyes and go back to the anchor of the breath. But it's really beginning to see that this opening your eyes is not ending your practice. It's developing your practice. Shifting to the metta phrases when there's aversion in the mind is not ending. It is developing a steadiness to stay here no matter what. Come what may. If you feel a lot of restlessness, we want to get disidentified with that restlessness. We can recognize it. We can allow it to be. Have some interest in the present moment, but the restlessness can build up into a big kerfuffle. And so I have found that steadying yourself here by opening to sounds, adding space, a widening of the room, also opening your eyes, taking in seeing, so it's not just restlessness, it's also seeing, hearing, finding a contact point so you can feel the body sitting still and that you can recognize you're not actually in all that energy. You're just sitting still here. And all of these added points help you steady your attention into the present moment rather than getting caught up in the actual restlessness. And desire and doubt, though they're not the same, when we get caught in some kind of doubting or desire, to me, the anchoring thing is present moment. When I'm in doubt, I just remind myself, all I have to do is know I'm in the present moment. That's it. Do I know where I'm at? Just sitting here. Feel into the body that I'm sitting here. Re-anchor myself. Have a sense of the weight of the body in this present moment. Sounds. It's just the present moment. It's the same way to me with desire. Whether that desire is because you're caught in a pleasant state or you're striving for a pleasant state. This desire is just allowing yourself to connect to the present moment, just as it is. And do you know you're just in a present moment, moment by moment? So the last sort of piece to practice with is with pain. We all experience pain in meditation. So recognizing it's just normal, natural. It's part of the practice. It's part of the development of mind. So to begin with, we don't. I think we need to take away this word pain. That sends a direct message to the mind that requires it to do certain things. And so taking away this word pain and allow it to be sensation. So this is sensation. And you can see the description of the sensation, if it's achy or if it's pressure or if it's hard. But you can begin to soften the words around it so you get a sense. And sometimes that's enough, just softening it to sensation. What kind of sensation is it? Is it pleasant? Is it unpleasant? And just allowing that sensation to be there. Recognizing the Vedana. Sometimes that can be enough. But other times you might notice that the intensity of the sensations is getting stronger and stronger and stronger, and your mind is reacting with aversion. Then you want to see if a movement, a shift, change in the posture, so moving to bring ease. If it does bring ease, it may be that you stand up to bring ease. But you want to actually bring the body into a state of ease. Practicing when the body's caught in all kinds of intense sensations and the mind is aversive, it's not really developing the mind. Your energy will just be sapped away. So you first see if you can settle the mind by working with it. And if that doesn't work, then you want to see if you can work with it by adjusting the body, adjusting your posture, bringing some ease and shift to the body. And when you feel that ease, staying with the process. Bring your attention back to the anchor and begin again. Saying all this with great detail, even though I know we're meditating. Because I want you to begin to sense that there's an intentionality with working with the hindrances. This intention to develop the mind. And the recognition that the hindrance is here to help you develop the mind. They're not in the way. They are the way. So when those hindrances show up, they're not taking you away from your stillness. They're there to help you develop a greater, stronger, more direct experience of that stillness. If you are fortunate enough to have one or more of these hindrances be with you over the next couple of days, then you have something to practice with strongly. And as long as you are a meditator, you will be with these hindrances. The Buddha had to deal with them himself. So they're not going anywhere. So here in this space, you have so much time and freedom to actually get to understand and know it. And so I hope you take it up as a friend. Even that very aggressive mind is not trying to harm you. It thinks this is what it has to do to get you right, to get you fixed, to get this right the way we want it to be. And so your presence here and this willingness to say and repeat those Brahmavihara phrases, just in the midst of a very angry mind, you can still repeat the Brahmavihara phrases. You just say them over and over and over. You don't have to fight the mind to get it to stop being that way. Instead, you just want to develop the strength of saying those phrases. And having had such an aggressive mind, when I realized that those phrases, I think I misunderstood and thought that I should be a loving person, and I'm saying these phrases with a mind that's really not in a loving space. And I thought, well, I can't say the phrases because I don't feel that. But what I realized was that by saying the phrases over and over and over, and some of you know, I use the ants because they really control the world out here. So I just imagine a series of ants lined up right in front of me, maybe happy, maybe peaceful, maybe still. Okay, next one. Just ant after ant after ant. And I had this mind that was so angry and so aggressive. And I would just be saying the phrases one ant at a time. And so it's not that that saying took away the aggressiveness of the mind. It helped me develop a mind that I could steady my attention onto something. You see what I'm saying? You are developing the steadiness of the mind. You're not trying to make your mind all nice and lovely and sweet. And so those are all byproducts of the steady, unified mind. So one thing I want to do before we leave is, many of you know I've been a student of Philip Moffat's for a long, long time. And the first time I sat with him and I did this ceremony with the vows of judging, comparing, and fixing, for a mind like mine, it was so, so, so supportive. It doesn't take away the judging, comparing, and fixing that we do. It's just a natural part of mind. But it's like the walking poles when you're going up a steep hill. Those poles are a gift from God, whoever created those things, that you can actually go up this hill in a steady way. So the vows here, I'm hoping you'll all be willing to take, is really more of a support mechanism in the midst of dealing with a mind that's shifting. You're shifting from this judging, comparing, and fixing mind into a more present moment, embodied mind. So on the judging side, that's when we constantly make this right or wrong determination. This is right, this is wrong, this is good, this is bad. And we're going through the experience, judging it, judging everything we see, rather than actually just seeing, just hearing, just being in the present moment. And so the vow is when you catch yourself doing that, you remember, oh no, I don't want to just let that go. Let me just see. Let me just notice I'm seeing or hearing and get step outside of that judging. This comparing mind is this mind that compares everything, compares this sit to that sit, this breath to that breath, this moment to that moment. This was right, this was better, this was worse, this was the same as. And we want to let go of that comparing and let each moment, each sit, each walking period, each session be in its own, be its own capacity. Whatever it is, this is the way it's supposed to be. So if it was still one sit and the next one's thinking, yep, this I'm going to work on thinking. So if I work on my thinking in this sit, then maybe the sits after will be still. But this sit is about thinking. This sit is about practicing with stillness. And each sit becomes its own sit. Each breath, each moment becomes its own moment for you to develop the mind and practice. And then the fixing mind is this habit energy that always sees something as being wrong and that you need to tweak it, fix it, make it better, fix the body, tweak the body, fix your meditation, fix what you're doing. It's this constant fixing everything, and it's not necessary. You are as it should be. Everything is as it should be, and it's the perfect condition for you to awaken if you're willing to just practice with whatever has come to you. And so the vow is very simple. It's just a, you'll repeat after me if you are interested. It's four parts to it. We're just going to announce each of these minds and I'll ring a bell. And then it's kind of like you've taken up this pole and you're about to head up to Mount Si in Washington and you can do it. All right, so we'll start with the judging mind. And so you can put your hands together. Some people do. You don't have to, but for the duration of this retreat, I renounce judging mind as best I'm able. For the duration of this retreat, I renounce comparing mind as best I'm able. For the duration of this retreat, I renounce fixing mind as best I'm able. And so this last part, as best I'm able, it really is the anchoring thing to help you realize that you're not going for perfection. You're going to judge, compare, and fix. But you're renouncing it. You're using it as a superpower to renounce as best you're able. And then sometimes you'll be able to do it more, and sometimes you won't. But it's fine. All right, just a couple of things. I got some questions here. Rather than take questions in the hall, I thought I would read a couple of questions here that were in the basket. First, I want to make a correction. Buddha did not say that he had the power to think, to wait, and to rest. Someone else said it. It was in a book. I can't remember now who it was, but some of you might know, I hear. Yeah. So I'm correcting that because I've realized that a lot of times we just say, oh, the Buddha said this or the Buddha said that, but he didn't say it. He did have superpowers of thinking, waiting, and fasting, but he didn't say that. And so I want to make sure, yes, we don't attribute that to him. So one question asks, do you draw a distinction between journaling and taking notes on practice, or are both discouraged? And if so, why? So this mind that we use to write is that ordinary mind. It's in the judging, comparing, fixing, it's habit, and we write. And a lot of our journaling is just the habit of writing everything down. So by journaling, this kind of free flow journaling, it is sort of like activating that habit mind. And we're trying to not activate that habit mind and instead activate this more embodied mind that's just in the present moment. It trusts whatever it hears. It's in the moment, hearing, seeing, experiencing it. I do make a distinction on notes where something happens and you want to write a little note. I limit it to no more than 3 lines. That's when I know that it's really just a jot down a note just to get something off and stop it, jot down 3 lines. If I start writing a whole page, that's journaling. That's habit mind just flowing. And that habit mind is actually, it doesn't seem like it, but it's taking away your good practice energy and putting it into the habit rather than back into your anchoring. You're not developing the mind. And so you want to limit even the taking of practice notes. I don't know how many of you look over your notes, but I used to look over my practice notes and all I really said was, wow, it's a breath. I felt the inhale and the exhale. It's not really going to give you any deep wisdom. It seems like deep wisdom when you're in the direct present moment. But when you look back on it, it just seems like random words that don't make a lot of sense. But 3 lines, if you can do it in 3 lines, then... Otherwise, I think letting go of the notes will begin to help you stay present here. And then there's a note here about the windows being open and whether or not we can open the windows. So I'll just leave this with the managers. If you have a question about the windows, the retreat coordinators are the ones that handle this. So the last practice question someone asked... wants to know the difference between the third and the fourth foundations, because the third foundation is thoughts, what's a lustful mind, and the fourth foundation, you're looking at the hindrances, like the desire, which is like a lustful mind. And the short, quick answer to this is, the third foundation, you're looking at the thoughts themselves. You're looking at the nature of those thoughts. The fourth foundation with the hindrances, you're looking at the whole process, your whole relationship with it, not just the thought itself, but the feeling tone, the habit energy, the force it has on us. And so you can think of the fourth foundation as kind of like looking at the combination of all the other three, along with Dhamma, having a Dhamma lens pointed at what's actually happening. And the first three as these more direct looking at certain aspects of the body-mind process. All righty. So this is a perfect day to practice with the hindrances, get to meet them, get to know them. I hope you'll find them as enjoyable as I do. And that... And that we'll see you during the meetings and later on in the Brahma Viharas.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.